and we're especially glad that you are here. We would love to have the opportunity to speak with you further after service. It's good to have all of our visitors with us, and good to have all those who are our members here. Jesus was a master teacher. Can you picture that setting when Jesus gave his Sermon on the Mount? Can you picture Jesus with his disciples, his band of disciples, sitting around him, the multitudes, thousands of them, listening on the outskirts as Jesus teaches his disciples, as he speaks to them, those beatitudes as he begins the Sermon on the Mount, those blessings that would be his disciples, blessings of the kingdom of heaven. Can you picture Jesus as he says to his disciples these words in Matthew 5, beginning with verse 14? You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do men light a lamp and put it under the peck measure, but on the lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. This is such a marvelous teaching that Jesus gives here, an important teaching for us as disciples, letting your light shine. Not taking your lamp and lighting it, but then hiding it, but instead allowing that light that a disciple of Jesus Christ is to emit, allow that light to shine and shine brightly, so that God may be glorified, so that others may see your good works and glorify God. Jesus tells his disciples in the Sermon on the Mount that that is a major component of what his disciples are supposed to do and what we're supposed to be. We are to be lights of this world. And as you think about this concept of allowing our light to shine, that others may see our good works, I think it's important for us to see this in contrast to some other things that Jesus has to say about this. Maybe the other side of the coin, lest we so emphasize one aspect, we go to a wrong extreme. I want you to think even about what Jesus says by way of contrast to these words in Matthew 5. The words he says in contrast in Matthew chapter 6. Still in the same sermon, where Jesus says, beginning in verse 1, beware of practicing your righteousness before men to be noticed by them. Otherwise, you have no reward from your Father who is in heaven. That's an interesting contrast. Jesus had just said earlier in his lesson, let your light shine that men may see your good works. But here he says, make sure that you do not do these good works in order to be noticed by men. What are you getting at, Jesus? Well, it's the contrast. It's Jesus wanting to make sure that we don't go to an extreme in all of this that would be unwarranted. In fact, he goes on to talk in Matthew chapter 6, verses 2 and following, about giving alms and not being like those hypocrites who give alms in a very public, grandiose way so that all may notice them and all look upon them as an almsgiver. Or he talks about those hypocrites who are praying in a very public way, just so that all will look upon them and think about how godly they are. I think in the context of this sermon, Jesus clearly has in mind the scribes and the Pharisees when he speaks about these hypocrites who publicly are wanting to be noticed by men. And as we've said in some recent lessons, I think the whole point in all of this is there is a tendency for people who are very religious, people who have a godliness, to somehow get off center with all that, to get off course in all of that, to where rather than serving God, what they're really trying to do is to call attention to themselves and to make themselves feel better. I think that's how you explain this contrasting statements here that Jesus makes in Matthew 5:16, where he says, let your light shine so that men may see your good works, and here where he says, now don't do things to be noticed by men. I think the point in all of this, the way that these two thoughts harmonize, it's in your motive. It's in your motive. Are you doing good works so that God will be glorified, or are you trying to do good works so that other people will see them and think what a great person you are? It's your heart. It's your motive that Jesus is trying to make sure is pure and what it needs to be. You know, when you think about all of this, you have to appreciate the fact that a lot of times people kind of get off kilter with all of this. I think sometimes preachers can get off kilter with all of this. I had a young preacher recently talk with me on the phone about his work there with the local church, and he would call me at various times, and there was no older preacher where he was at to kind of be a mentor, so he would call me from time to time, and we would talk. And he called me one day, and he said, "I've got a gospel meeting. I'm going to be holding my first gospel meeting." And he was so excited about that. And I said, "Well, that's good. That's fine." And he said, "In all seriousness, I just really feel like I've arrived now, Brother Pickup. I feel like I have now become a big preacher." And my heart just kind of sank. Because I was really disappointed in him. And the thing that really struck me about all that is that I knew this young man so well. That was completely against his normal character. I have never known a young man who was more humble in ordinary circumstances, or on other occasions more self-deprecating than this man. And I don't know, maybe that's kind of what prompted him to finally slip into this error of somehow thinking that, okay, this action of preaching or holding a gospel meeting, well, that builds up my self-esteem, and now I can be a big preacher and all that, you know. And it was a distasteful attitude that he was displaying. And I say that not because I think this young man is a condemnable young man. I think he's typical of all of us. And it shows us how easy it can be for us to slip into that kind of attitude. It's all about your motive. It's all about your heart. And so we need to appreciate this concept here. Jesus says you need to make sure that your aim and your goal is to glorify God. Not so that your self-esteem is going to get built up. Not so you can feel better about you. Not so you can have other people look at you and talk about what a great person you are. It's all about your Father receiving the glory. And so Jesus emphasizes this point to his disciples. Obviously, he's concerned that his disciples might fall prey to this very problem. I think what Jesus says here in Matthew chapter 5 is also, by way of contrast, to what we see later in a discourse in Matthew's gospel, Matthew 23, verses 1 through 12. And again, Jesus, in this discourse, is not just talking about the scribes and Pharisees. He's addressing the scribes and Pharisees. They illustrate the kind of poor attitude of godliness that Jesus is talking about. In Matthew 23, beginning with verse 1, the text says, "Then Jesus spoke to the multitudes and to his disciples, saying, 'The scribes and the Pharisees have seated themselves in the chair of Moses. Therefore, all that they tell you, do and observe, but do not do according to their deeds, for they say things and do not do them. And they tie up heavy loads and lay them on men's shoulders, but they themselves are unwilling to move them with so much as a finger. But they do all their deeds to be noticed by men, for they broaden their phylacteries and lengthen the tassels of their garments, and they love the place of honor at banquets and the chief seats in the synagogues, and respectful greetings in the marketplaces, and being called by men rabbi. But do not be called rabbi, for one is your teacher, and you are all brothers. And do not call anyone on earth your father, for one is your Father who is in heaven. And do not be called leaders, for one is your leader, that is Christ. But the greatest among you shall be your servant. And whoever exalts himself shall be humbled. And whoever humbles himself shall be exalted. Jesus says the scribes and Pharisees, they have taken godliness as something that is to benefit them. And to benefit them in the eyes of the community. And to allow them to be viewed with esteem and honor and have the chief seats in the synagogue. And to be called rabbi or my father or my leader. And by the way, he's not just talking about some title that you might give some person. Though it is true that that term rabbi at this time and then later would come to be a sort of title that these Jewish teachers would receive, a title of respect and honor. But it isn't just the wearing of a title, it's that you're wanting to be in that kind of role, that kind of leadership position, or that kind of rabbi role, or that kind of a position where you're the teacher, and then here are your spiritual children, so to speak. You're their father, they're your children, they're your disciples. You're wanting that kind of position because it builds you up. It makes you feel good about you. And it builds you up in their eyes. And that kind of experience and that kind of emotion, that's what you're after. Jesus says that's what the scribes and Pharisees are motivated by. And he says, that's not the way it is with my disciples. That's not the way it's supposed to be, Jesus says. And of course, we have so many people in the religious world today, in the so-called Christian world, who, it seems to me, don't understand this teaching. In fact, rather than understanding it, just go ahead and just give these honorific titles to their preachers or their leaders. And so we speak about Reverend so-and-so, and that's his title. That's his honorific title. Or we speak about Father so-and-so. And the whole concept of that, whether it's an actual title, which is an extreme illustration of the problem, or whether it's just the way that people are viewed and treated, that somehow they're exalted, and then those people in that position, they like it, and that's why they want that position. That's a complete disregard of the Lord's teaching here. And don't think that it's just those denominationalists out there who speak about Reverend so-and-so, or use the title Father so-and-so, or use some other kind of honored title or verbiage to somehow elevate someone. Don't think it's only them. Guess what? We tend to do it too. We don't realize it at times, but we tend to. Years ago, a few more years that I'd like to admit to, when I was a sophomore at Florida College, I decided that I wanted to preach. At that time, my family worshiped at the university congregation. And the elders there, they knew that I was wanting to preach and maybe get started doing that. And so they were gracious enough to allow me to start to give some lessons and sermons. You know, we've tried to do that here. And so they allowed me to do that. And I appreciated that. After the very first sermon that I preached, a lot of the ladies began to call me and speak of me differently than they spoke of me earlier. You know, they used to just refer to me as Marty. You know? Well, Marty this, Marty that, you know. They started calling me Brother Pickup. And my dad heard that. I remember being at the dinner table and saying one evening, Brother Pickup, would you care to offer thanks? You know. And so from that moment on, really to this day, it's sort of a running joke between me and my father. Brother Pickup. Because now you're a preacher. Well, you've given a sermon, so now you're a preacher. Well, now you've been elevated. You're Brother Pickup. Please. I was Marty before, I'm still Marty after that, and still am Marty now. And that's the point Jesus is trying to get at. And that so often we kind of lose sight of that. And we maybe don't realize it, but we're kind of guilty of that. And we maybe even assist and enable other people in thinking of themselves more highly than they ought to by the way that we treat them and speak of them. I don't mean that Christians shouldn't show respect to one another, but all of us are brothers and sisters in the Lord, and none of us are any different than anyone else. We're all just disciples of Jesus, and it doesn't matter what our work is, doesn't matter whether we're an overseer in the church or we're a deacon in a local congregation, doesn't somehow elevate us above anybody else. We still have one Father, one leader, one rabbi, and we're just disciples. That's all we are. And we need to understand that. And I've known some people get upset sometimes when, you know, the church selected deacons. You know, I didn't get voted in, you know, and I'm just angry about that, you know. Well, why come so-and-so got asked to be a deacon or so-and-so got asked to be an elder and I didn't? You see what's wrong with our whole motive? We've lost sight of what this is all about. It's about letting your light shine so that others may see not how good we are or glorify us, but so they may see God in us and God's spirit and God's attitude in us and glorify God. He's the one who it's all about. It's not about us. And sometimes if we're not careful, we can lose sight of it. You know, Jesus also emphasizes in the same context, a city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor does anyone light a lamp and put it under a basket. And in Matthew chapter 5, in the immediate context, this is the emphasis he's trying to give. When he talks about us being lights of the world, in the context, he's trying to emphasize, you as my disciples, don't go to the other extreme from what we've just been talking about. Don't go to that other extreme where you are somehow hiding your light. You're ashamed or embarrassed or somehow hesitant to allow others to know that you're my disciple or that you follow my teaching. And so he says nobody would think of lighting one of those oil lamps that you would have seen all throughout Palestine so that a room could be lightened, and yet taking that lighted lamp and then putting it under a basket and just obscuring all that light. That would be an absurdity. And Jesus says, it's the same way with my disciples. Don't fail to let your light shine. So that's the other extreme. And so sometimes you got people that let their light shine for the wrong motive, but sometimes you have people, well, their light is lit, but they purposely kept it hidden so other people won't see because of their shame, their embarrassment at being a disciple of Jesus. You know, I think of that classic passage in John chapter 12 where you read about those who were coming to believe on Jesus, even some of those who were the leaders of the people coming to believe on Jesus, and yet there was a problem. John 12, verse 42. Nevertheless, many, even of the rulers, believed in him, but because of the Pharisees, they were not confessing him, lest they should be put out of the synagogue. For they loved the approval of men rather than the approval of God. That's an interesting statement. Here you've got the opposite problem from what we were talking about before. And yet, the reason for it was somewhat similar. They were so wanting the approval of men that when the approval of men meant denying that you were a Christian, or at least not being public with the fact that you were a believer in Jesus, I should say here, well then, they kept quiet about that. They believed Jesus was from God, but they weren't confessing it, they weren't acknowledging it publicly, lest they be put out of the synagogue. Again, they were thinking about themselves, and they weren't thinking about God and His purposes and His goals. I want you to think about this passage in Romans chapter 12, verses 9 and 10. It's a passage that oftentimes is kind of used as a sort of proof text so to speak, for the fact that if a person wants to obey the gospel of Jesus Christ, he needs to be willing to confess in a public manner that he believes in Jesus. And so we sometimes cite this passage, Romans chapter 10, verses 9 and 10, where Paul says, "If you confess with your mouth Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you shall be saved. For with the heart man believes, resulting in righteousness, and with the mouth he confesses, resulting in salvation." Well, I certainly believe you can use this verse to point out that if someone wants to become a disciple of Jesus, he needs to be willing to confess his faith in Jesus. It would be unthinkable that someone could be a disciple of Jesus and yet not be willing to admit it. And so, yes, even to initially become that disciple and have your sins forgiven, obviously that is part of what you have to do. But these verses are not in context talking about what a person needs to do to initially be regarded as saved and initially be forgiven of his sins and stand right before God on judgment day. Now, Paul's talking in the context about Christians, people who already are Christians. He's talking about our life as a servant of Jesus. It needs to be a lifetime of faith, a lifetime of confessing that faith in Jesus, unashamedly, unabashedly, acknowledging before anyone and everyone, if need be, "I am a believer in Jesus and proud to be a believer in Jesus and proud and happy to tell you I am a believer in Jesus." That's what God is talking about here. And why do you think he's so emphasizing the need for us to confess our faith? It's because of the very point Jesus was making back in Matthew chapter 5. He doesn't want people as his disciples who are going to have their lamp lit and then hide it under a basket. That's not real discipleship. That's not what Jesus was all about. In fact, can you imagine Jesus hiding his light under a basket? Can you imagine Jesus when John the Baptist was finally thrown in prison, and it was obvious that John the Baptist's ministry was now over with? You know, the Gospels say that that's when Jesus immediately went up to Galilee to begin his ministry. Why did he do that? Because he knew, okay, now it's my time. What if Jesus had decided, well, you know, I'm just going to just talk privately to people here, maybe in homes, but not in a public way. I'm going to make sure that I don't have thousands of people coming after me wanting to listen in like the multitudes were listening in to his Sermon on the Mount. What if Jesus had kept his lamp hidden? It would have gone against the very plan of God. And Jesus says, my disciples also, when their lamps are lit, it needs to be brightly shining so that others may see their good works, see them as they do those things that I've been teaching, and ultimately that God might be glorified. And that's what it's all about. That's why Jesus calls upon us to always be people throughout our Christian life who are confessing our faith in him without shame, without diffidence. We need to appreciate what is said in Acts chapter 8, in verse 4, about these earliest disciples there in Jerusalem who began to be persecuted in the aftermath of Stephen's martyrdom. You recall this passage, Acts chapter 8. I'll begin reading with verse 1. It talks about how on that day a great persecution arose against the church in Jerusalem, and they were all scattered throughout the regions of Judea and Samaria, except the apostles. And some devout men buried Stephen, made loud lamentation over him. But Saul began ravaging the church, entering house after house, and dragging off men and women. He would put them in prison. And then verse 4 says, therefore, those who had been scattered went about preaching the word. That's an amazing statement. You know, I think our attitude might be, you know, I'd be real quick to forgive those people if they in this persecution if they were scattered and they just kind of kept their mouth shut. I'd be real quick to defend them on that one. That's not what these people did. And we need to appreciate what these people did. The fact that they were persecuted, the fact that they were scattered, it didn't shut them up. It didn't make them stop confessing Jesus as their Lord and Master. All the more, they began to preach Him and proclaim Him. And as you go throughout the book of Acts, what you see is that this scattering of disciples in the aftermath of Stephen's martyrdom, it's what caused them to start preaching to all of these Jews outside of Palestine as well as Gentiles outside of Palestine. That's what it's all about, folks. It's about letting our light shine. It's about spreading that light of the gospel of Jesus Christ. I won't mention their names, but let me tell you about a couple of our members right here. In the last month, there have been two young women who have been in communication with me about studies and conversations that they are having with people who are not Christians, whom they are trying to bring to the Lord. One of them is a single young lady. The other one is a married young lady. And I think of them when I read these verses here. Because you might think that, okay, these are two young people. They're not as old in the faith as some of the rest of us. You might think, well, okay, they would not maybe be the ones who would be most evangelistic. Or you might think, well, you know, they're girls, and so, you know, maybe we might think men might tend to be a little more confident and get out there and speak more, you know, boldly or something, you know. But these young women, they're talking to people about the gospel. They're bringing them to church. I don't mean to suggest these are the only ones, by the way, who are doing this. I'm just saying they have stood out in my mind. And they talk to me through email or in person about people they're trying to study with and about, now, you know, they're saying this, and, you know, what should I say? You know, what's the Bible say about that? Let's study. Let me better equip myself to be able to know God's word, to be able to instruct these people. They aren't even saying, and it would be fine if they did, hey, Marty, could you study with us and kind of lead a discussion here, that would be fine. But that's not even what they're doing. What they're doing is saying, hey, can you help me to better be able to just privately teach these people I'm trying to convert to Jesus Christ? I just think that's great. We've said recently in a lesson toward the beginning of this year, as we were kind of looking at the year 2011 for the Valrico congregation and goals we were trying to set, we emphasized in that one goal that we need to set is to be more evangelistic. And I would suggest that we think about this passage here in Acts chapter 8 and verse 4. And as the illustration of these two young women shows, there are a lot of us here who are already really trying to do that, to be more evangelistic. And may I say to you that that's something that we all need to be doing, because that's a part of letting our light shine. Now, I don't mean to suggest that everybody has the same ability to teach and to instruct someone, whether it's in a public venue or whether it's in a private Bible study. Not everybody has that same ability. Not trying to suggest that if you aren't able to do that kind of thing, that you need to feel bad, or that means you necessarily are hiding your light under a basket. Not suggesting that whatsoever. However, make sure it's not because you're hiding your light under a basket. Make sure the reason why you are bringing someone to church, make sure it's not because, well, you're embarrassed to invite them. Or make sure that if you're not having this conversation with them about the gospel at work, in the break room, or your next door neighbor, or whatever, make sure the reason why you're not having that kind of conversation with them, make sure it's not because you're afraid to, or you're embarrassed to, and you're just hiding your light. Instead, I hope all of us can see it as our goal, and we're going to remind ourselves at various points throughout the year of this goal to be more evangelistic and really emphasize that this year, because we're in such a good position. We've got so many good people, so many contacts with people. We need to be able to concentrate on those souls and bring them to Jesus Christ. And it all starts with letting our light shine. So Jesus says to his disciples, you need to make sure that you let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. It's not about you building up your self-esteem. It's not about you looking good in front of other people. It's about the Lord. And it's about people seeing the good things that you and I do and the things that we say about the teachings of Jesus and coming to know the Lord and coming to glorify His name, even as we are seeking to do. I hope that we can carry these thoughts with us this week and let our light shine. Let it shine brightly. If there's someone here tonight who needs to respond to the gospel, I hope that you will do so. I hope you won't be afraid, you won't be timid, but I hope you'll do whatever you need to do to glorify God in heaven and to make your life right with Him so that indeed He will be glorified. Won't you come while together we stand and sing this song of encouragement?